Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. Hey everyone, it's Saturday, July 26th. I was in Boston last night borrowing my uncle's Tesla, and I got locked out. So here's the interesting thing with Teslas. You only have two ways to get into the vehicle. There's the key card, which you get when you buy the vehicle, or there's an app that they'll give you that you can log in and then you can digitally get into the car. And that's it. There is no metal key. I was parked in a parking structure, so that might have had something to do with it, but the NFC key card that they gave me, and by the way, NFC is the same tap-to-pay technology that you use at any checkout terminal with Apple Pay or Google Pay, but anyway, that key card just wouldn't read for whatever reason. So then they gave me the login to the app, and I was in this, this parking garage, and I tried to log into the app, and I was able to get in, which was great. But then when I tried to add my phone to like activate the Tesla, they had already had the maximum number of drivers linked. And I don't know what the number is. I think it's like 5. And here's where it gets absurd. The app told me that the only way to remove a driver from the app is from inside the vehicle. So I couldn't use the app because it was full of drivers. And then I couldn't fix the app because I couldn't get into the car. And I couldn't get into the car because the key card wasn't working. So luckily, my uncle ended up calling the Tesla roadside assistance, and they got me in remotely, and it was fine. And I got home safely, all is good. But standing outside that car in the parking garage, waiting on the phone for someone on a server somewhere at, Tesla's facilities to let me into a physical object standing 3 feet in front of me, a thought hit me. If my uncle had just lent me a normal car, he would probably have given me a metal key. Or if he gave me a key fob, even the key fob has a metal key inside of it, by the way. Don't know if you know that, but all the fobs that you use, you can open that key and you can use the metal key to get into the car. But the idea with that is that there's no servers, there's no app, probably not a phone call. And that failure, which is that gap between having permission to use something and then actually being able to use it, is the way into something that I've been thinking about for a long time. We've quietly rerouted ownership through other people's software, and most of us never clocked the trade-off. The shift is from possession to permission, and once you start looking at it that way, it's literally everywhere. Okay, let's go back a few years. Amazon's Kindle store used to have a buy now button. In 2024, after California passed a law requiring digital storefronts to disclose the true nature of digital purchases, Amazon changed the language to, quote, by placing your order, you're purchasing a license to the content, end quote. A license to the content. You don't own your Kindle books. You own a revocable license that Amazon can modify, restrict, or terminate. And you can't resell it, lend it permanently, or leave your Kindle library to someone in a will. And in 2009, Amazon demonstrated exactly how far that control extends when they remotely deleted books from customers' Kindles without notice. By the way, this part is absolutely great because the books that Amazon deleted were George Orwell's 1984 and Animal Farm. So for anyone who doesn't know, 1984 is the dystopian book that talks about like how technology can ruin everything. But let's get back to the story. This same pattern, though, that we're seeing runs through cars now. Tesla remotely removed autopilot and full self-driving features from used Teslas that had been resold without Tesla's involvement. The original owner paid for those features. The car was sold with those features active, and Tesla reached into the vehicle software after the sale and just turned them off. As of February 2026, Tesla eliminated the option to buy full self-driving as a one-time purchase entirely, making it only available as a $99 per month subscription. Also, fun fact here, BMW tried charging a monthly subscription for heated seats that were already physically installed in the car. The hardware was sitting in your dashboard, fully functional, but the software switch is what would determine whether you could use it. They actually backed down after public outrage, but the fact that the experiment was even attempted tells you where the industry is heading. The pattern extends to almost everything digital. Video games that require a server connection die when the server shut down. Photos in iCloud exist at Apple's discretion, and movies you, quote, purchased on Amazon or iTunes or whatever that is, can now be revoked if the agreement between the studio and the platform changes. In each case, you actually don't hold the thing. You hold access to the thing, and that access runs through somebody else's infrastructure. It's subject to their own terms, their uptime, and their continued willingness to provide it to you. I work in the crypto and blockchain space, and there's a phrase in the crypto world that captures this tension perfectly. They say, not your keys, not your coins. Which means if your cryptocurrency sits on an exchange, let's say Coinbase or someone else, you actually do not control it. The exchange does. They hold the private keys. You hold an account balance on their platform, which is functionally the same as a bank balance, an IOU that depends entirely on the institution's solvency, honesty, and continued operation. Not sure how many of you remember this, but FTX proved what happens when that trust breaks. In November of 2022, over 7 million customers had deposited roughly $20 billion on the platform. When a wave of withdrawal requests hit, FTX couldn't cover them. On November 8th, the exchange simply removed the withdrawal option from its website, freezing hundreds of thousands of accounts overnight. Customers had money in their accounts that they could see on their screens, but they just couldn't touch, move, or access it in any way. The number the screen showed them was real. Their ability to use it was not. The exchange owed customers $8 billion it didn't have. It took over 2 years of bankruptcy proceedings before customers began receiving distributions, and while most eventually recovered the dollar value of their accounts at the time of collapse, anyone who held Bitcoin got back $17,000 per coin instead of the actual Bitcoin, which by the time distributions began was worth actually 5 or 6 times that. Self-custody in crypto means holding your own private keys, usually through a hardware wallet or a software wallet where you control the seed phrase, which is a string of words that functions as the master password to your funds. There's no exchange that can freeze your account. There's no institution that can block your transactions. And nobody can go bankrupt and take your money with them. But every bit of the risk is then yours. You lose the seed phrase, you lose the coins. No customer service to call. There's no forgot password button, no recovery process. If someone steals your credit card number, the bank just reverses the charges and you lose nothing because the custodian absorbed the risk. If someone steals your Bitcoin private keys, the coins are gone forever because you are the custodian and there's nobody above you to fix that. That's the trade-off that most people are unwilling to accept, even after watching FTX collapse in real time. The crypto distinction between custodial and non-custodial maps onto everything, not just digital assets. The question in any system is the same. Who has the final, irrevocable say over the thing that you're using? On one end of the spectrum, pure custodial, which is someone else holds it and grants you access. Your Kindle library, your app-only Tesla access, even your bank account to a degree. Most people think of their bank balance as money, but it's actually just an IOU from the bank. A promise to give you your money when you ask for it. The bank technically can freeze it. A court can garnish it. And if the bank fails and your balance exceeds FDIC, which is Federal Deposit Insurance Corporate Limits, that's the insurance for your bank account. It's usually up to $250,000, by the way. But anyway, anything you hold over that, you can potentially lose. People trust the system so completely that they've forgotten it's custodial at all, which is maybe the most interesting example of custody working so well that it becomes invisible. On the other end, pure non-custodial, you hold it, and nobody can revoke it. It's cash in your pocket, it's a self-custody crypto wallet, or it's an old mechanical key that can get me into the Tesla. Well, not a Tesla, but maybe any other car. It's total sovereignty. But if you lose it, you lose it. There is nobody to call. Tesla wouldn't be able to help me if I lost my physical metal key. So most well-designed systems aren't purely one or the other. The best ones are hybrid. And the concept that clarifies the difference is what I've been thinking as the non-custodial floor. So a Toyota key fob, for example, is electronic and connected. But as I said in the beginning of the episode, if you pop the cover off, there's actually a physical mechanical blade hidden inside that fits into the door lock and the ignition. If the fob battery dies, if the car's electronics fail, if every server between you and Toyota goes down, the blade still works. It's a non-custodial floor under a custodial ceiling. The convenience of keyless entry sits on top, but underneath it is a fallback that depends on nothing but metal and physics. Tesla's key card was supposed to be that fallback for me in Boston, but it's electronic. It requires NFC to communicate with the car, and when the NFC glitched, I had no floor. Every path between me and getting in that car ran through software, and when the software failed, I was locked out of something that I had full permission to use. A metal key would have worked. NFC didn't. The gap between those two outcomes is the difference between a system that has a custodial floor and one that doesn't. Your bank account has a floor if you keep some cash at home. Your crypto has a floor if you hold your own keys alongside exchange accounts. Your car has a floor if somewhere underneath the smart systems, there's a mechanical key or a manual override that works when everything else doesn't. The honest question isn't whether custody is good or bad, because institutional custody does give us fraud protection, recoverability, and convenience that most people wouldn't want to live without. To be honest, I wouldn't want to live without it either. Nobody wants to actually secure their own bank vault or be one lost seed phrase away from losing everything in your crypto wallet. The question is whether the things that you own still have a floor, or whether every path to everything that you've paid for runs through somebody else's permission. We're not making that trade-off consciously is the issue, I think. We're making using the custody the default option. One app, connected purchase at a time. And most of us won't notice until the NFC actually doesn't read. So to kind of wrap things up here, I got into the car, Tesla Roadside was helpful, and the rest of my trip was totally fine. But I've been thinking about that moment outside the locked Tesla in Boston ever since, because it's the cleanest illustration that I've experienced of something that's happening everywhere. It's the shift from possession to permission, from holding a thing to holding access to the thing, from a world where a metal key opens a door to a world where someone else's server decides whether you're allowed in or not. Amazon can delete your books. Tesla can disable your features, and FTX could freeze your money, all with the click of a button and without asking your permission first. The question isn't whether convenience is worth the trade-off, because it usually is. The question is whether there's a floor underneath, a thing that works when nothing else does, and whether you've checked one before you need it. And the one thing I want to mention before I go, almost all of this is legal. Sure, there are some gray areas, but for the most part, these companies are allowed to do what they do because the terms of service you agreed to when you signed up gave them that right. And even in the cases where someone does challenge it, you're looking at years of litigation before any kind of resolution is reached. And by that point, the damage is done. I mean, look at me. When you're standing outside a locked car at night in Boston, you're not thinking about filing a lawsuit or getting a couple hundred bucks in a settlement 3 years from now. You're just cooked. And that's the gap between what's legal and what feels right. So, hey, stay informed, stay curious, stay in control, and we'll see you tomorrow.